Hi, beautiful people. I want to just, start off by saying thanks. This is weird and we don't get to hug each other and I don't get to bring tutus, you know, to break time. We don't get to play with each other. And I think this year we need it. So I want to start this moment by just encouraging you all to take a deep breath and thank yourselves for the outrageous work that you've done this year. You've recreated your entire lives. You've reorganized, you've recreated your organizations. You've found a way to serve people in ways that we never dreamed we would serve people. And they're profound and they're meaningful. And your dedication and commitment and flexibility has just been unreal. It's frustrating and it's so scary. And as we come to each of these calls, our numbers have gotten smaller and smaller, even, you know, in that moment, right? And we're kind of this microcosm on the board of the rest of the organization, watching our numbers grow smaller and watching our ability to provide services kind of change and shift and completely shut down. And it's been so emotional and so hard. So I want to just thank you for your dedication and your willingness to show up today with an open heart and excitement to see what we can do to make things happen. The most exciting thing about adult day healthcare is that we seem to fit in this weird place where nothing else fits. We squeeze ourselves into all of the needs that our people have. We're not a nursing home, we're not a dayhab, we're not a daycare, we're not a social, we're not a residential, we're not a this, we're not a that. No one can say exactly what we are because we're so many things to the people that we serve. And this is a unique opportunity for us to figure out how we can be even more things, in how we can meet people's needs in even more creative and innovative ways. I've learned from members of our populace, it's so much in the past few months, from the webinars and the telehealth programs and the, about telehealth and all of the other levels of programming that we're working to provide, the board meetings where, oh man, every person is pouring their heart into every moment and like begging the state to give us an opportunity to serve our people. We're hearing from our membership every day saying, you know, we're at our wit's end, what can we do? And you're still trying and you're still reaching out and you're still making really beautiful moves. I wanna thank you for your hard work and resilience. And I honestly don't know how to say this, but don't stop, right? Don't stop, we're close. We're almost there. We're almost at the point where we're going to be able to find a way to open our doors. And in the meantime, let's continue to really push the envelope and find ways to serve our populace now. To that end, Anne said earlier, we need people on the board. I'm speaking to you now, and I shouldn't be. We should be having, you know, the chair should be speaking to you. And I guess that's me now. So I should be, but you know, whatever, let's not get confused. I think the moral of the story is we need you to step up because I need someone else on that executive space. I can't be past chair, former chair, soon to be chair and chair. You know, all of us wear many hats. We need you. We need your ideas. We need your creativity. We need your spark and the things that you're doing for your folks. Bring them. We've got a lot of requests of you today, and we've got a lot of information. And I think this is the moment that we're really asking. You've been asking us what to do. We're bringing it, and we're going to ask you to do some stuff with us. And don't give up hope. Hopefully next year we get to do this in person and have cocktails. And tonight, have a cocktail and maybe put on a tutu. Hang in there, folks. Don't give up.
Awesome. Thank you, Angelina. I'm now going to turn it over to Linnell Bosworth. Linnell is a shareholder and our lobbyist. She's also a lawyer at Greenberg Traurig, which is a firm here in Albany. And we've been working with Greenberg Traurig for, I think, 3 years now, right, Linnell? And in addition to Linnell, she's got a huge team of, experts in government relations and regulations and statutes. And so we're really thankful that Linnell is here today to give an update on what's been going on for the last, five months or so, just to bring everybody up to speed as to where we are with adult day healthcare reopening and the next steps that the board has decided. So I'll turn it over to you. Thanks, Linnell.
Sure. Good morning, everybody. Thanks, Anne, for those words, and also Angelina for your words as well. I think it sort of your opening remarks and the recognition of folks in your program conveys the specialized niche in which the adult day programs fit, and certainly has been central to the messaging to the Department of Health and the Executive Chamber about why this program is so essential to providing healthcare to a very vulnerable population. So I think, as Anne said, a good place to start would probably just to walk through what we've been doing for the last few months and advocating on your behalf. So as many of you recall, there was a directive from the Department of Health back in March to shut down immediately. No notice, just the directive that came out. It was pretty abrupt, and there it was. So everybody was in the throes of COVID and managing and trying to understand, what this meant. And so over the course of the next couple of months, we grappled with what would reopening look like. I mean, closure was kind of immediate, but how would we calibrate a reopening plan? So Anne worked really hard with many of you, and we worked together to try to pull together a reopening plan, at least the bones of which would guide the Department of Health to have confidence to reopen the programs. So that we submitted to the Department of Health back in May. And then over the next 60 days, we had a number of conversations with the Department of Health to understand how certain things would work, how the department was thinking about things, and the kinds of activities that could be permissible or workarounds. And I think it bears noting that during this time, the Department of Health staff was obviously maxed out trying to, even if people were not typically assigned to COVID, I mean, who would be, but if it was not even remotely in their wheelhouse, they were assigned to COVID. So, I do thank the DOH staff for all their efforts over the past several months to the public health crisis and working with us. Nevertheless, we finally sort of elevated the issue to the executive chamber, recognizing that a lot of the decisions about wholesale decisions regarding COVID and industries and sectors that were getting to reopen were being made by the executive chamber staff. That's the governor's staff. In August, Anne, myself, and another one of my colleagues had a call with the governor's counsel, Elizabeth Garvey, and her deputy and the assistant counsel responsible for health. and the Secretary for Health at the time for what would a reopening plan look like. And they had received our draft. DOH had put their stamp on it. And, you know, we talked through the issues. And I think there was an acknowledgement that the governor was feeling very reluctant to reopen a program serving such a vulnerable population. And I think, you know, if you're reading the newspapers, you also know that nursing homes is ground zero for some of the, I think the governor's office and the governor himself has been applauded by a number of sectors for his handling of the pandemic. But the one place where he's getting significant criticism is with respect to the nursing homes. And so our affiliation with nursing homes, I think, gave them an extra layer of caution and an extra layer of trepidation with respect to reopening. In any event, we've had a few calls with the executive chamber trying to understand, you know, how we can move the needle. They acknowledged that their reopening guidance is almost all the way there. DOH has signed off for all intents and purposes. I mean, it's not official until we see it, but they did not have a lot of concerns. We had kind of gone back and forth with a couple of pieces, but you know, they assured us that they have been working in tandem to have the guidance ready to be released and allow programs to reopen. And I really, Anne has done a phenomenal job to reassure the staff in technical detail about how some of the logistics would work, from how folks would be transported to the programs to how nursing home staff who would typically move between programs, how that would work. You know, just a number of really granular issues that maybe you probably wouldn't expect the council to the governor to be focused on, has been focused on that, and Anne has really navigated all that exceptionally well. So that leads us to September. The executive chamber did give us some draft guidance. Also, I'll just say back to the DOH staff piece, part of where I wanted to go was following the initial crisis of the COVID response in the state, a number of DOH staffers who were working on the front lines did either retire or move on to other positions. And so that did take a bit of time to recalibrate who was responsible for what and within their organization, and then how, and getting up to speed. So that too added a wrinkle here. So we received the draft guidance in September, and then we've kind of stalled out. I think there have been a number of outreaches to the executive chamber by either, you know, myself, my colleagues, other consultants who may be on the call today, just trying to get some visibility into a potential timeline. And, you know, we have continued to be a good working partner with the executive chamber and the DOH staff, and, you know, recognizing all that they're doing. But I think, you know, in our latest conversations, we conveyed to them that, you know, movie theaters are now open. If social day programs are open. It really is starting to feel like there is an arbitrary distinction about why adult day programs remain closed. You know, it's unfair. And I certainly, on no uncertain terms, conveyed to the executive chamber that the last thing anybody wants to do is get adversarial. But nevertheless, there has to come a point in time where we understand what the outlook is here. And we need certainty. You need certainty. Your members need certainty. And I don't think that's an unreasonable ask. We've been dealing with this for 8 months now. Everybody sort of understands that, you know, what kind of protocols have been put in place and how we could move forward, recognizing that, I mean, we are dealing with a pandemic. So I think that's sort of where we are now. And you know, Greenberg, I think Anne mentioned that I work with a number of folks at my office, some of who have a different skill set than I do, including crack litigators who understand the parameters and sort of the outer reaches of executive discretion. So we're currently working on a letter to DOH to outline why we think the closure and lack of a timeline, the ongoing closure, lack of a timeline is arbitrary, and to understand what kind of next steps we can anticipate from the department. So I think I'll stop there. Anne, did I miss anything? Do I have, is there more you'd like me to?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, the board voted on this first step. So this is above and beyond what, you know, a lobbyist does, or, you know, our contract with Greenberg. So we have retained, or in the process of retaining, Greenberg for this legal letter. And so this is, we feel like this is a really good first step to lay out these arguments clearly. And Linnell, maybe, you know, we can talk about the timeline for that letter. Is that going to, you know, within the next few weeks, should be sent to the health department?
Right. I think we'll nail down, my colleagues are working on a draft, and then we would share the draft with Anne and the board, and then, you know, submit the letter to the Department of Health, also advising the executive chamber that the letter is going in. You know, I have a philosophy that if we don't need to surprise people, then that's usually the best path. So, you know, I would never lob in some kind of line in the sand without giving people a heads up that it's coming. Because, you know, the truth is we need to continue working with them and partnering with them. And I think that they're, you know, they appreciate that kind of dialogue. So those would be the next steps. Once we finalize the letter, let people know it's coming, and then send it in.
And, you know, litigation is always the last resort. So that would be perhaps something to consider following this letter.
Yeah, and I think in tandem, which sort of, you know, I'm happy to answer any questions, but I think Anne asked me what we could do at one point, and I said, you know, ideally, we would also be working with a PR firm to elevate and to put patient stories out in the media in order to really elevate the compelling nature of the closure. So I think, you know, that's sort of the next segment and the next step, but I'll stop there. And in the event people have questions, I'm happy to answer.
Thanks, Linnell. So if you have a question for Linnell or about the status of where we are with opening, can you just type that in the chat button? It goes right to me, and we'll just pause for a minute or two and to collect your questions, if there are any.
And certainly if you don't feel like asking, or you, something comes to mind, obviously I'm speaking to Anne daily. So if you would you know, if you want to reach out, we're happy to answer anything if it comes to you later.
So we have, thanks. So we have a question here. Do we have a timeline on response from DOH regarding the letter? And then a timeline on potential litigation if needed.
So, you know, I think that those are moving targets. As a technical matter, if you were going to file a, if you were going to file some kind of litigation, there are some timelines that we would work around, but, you know, certainly, I guess the outer limit would be by the end of the year.
To file?
Yeah.
Right. But of course, you know, it, the whole scope of litigation could take, I don't know, from if we get a response from a judge, it could be 3 to 4 months or going into years or a year, correct? So litigation is a really drawn out process. So it's not, there's not an immediate, you know, solution, you know, there's nothing really immediate about Adult Day Healthcare reopening when it comes to, you know, litigation or filing a suit.
There are a couple of ways that you can try to front load any kind of decisions and sort of make motions on the front end of your filings in order to get preliminary relief from the judges pending a final arbitration of the matter. And I think we would leverage every opportunity to do that in order to expedite any kind of progress. And we've talked about those kinds of steps with Anne and the board. But I think, you know, the overarching, you know, litigation is typically the last straw. And, you know, I mean, from the government's perspective, they get sued every day. So, you know, it's not as much from their perspective that it would be a shocking or, you know, earth-shattering event. However, from our perspective, it's a big deal to take legal action against the regulator, your regulator. It happens. I have, you know, one of my colleagues who is working on your current response is the former counsel to the Department of Health. So, you know, this is a back and forth that happens regularly, but, you know, from our perspective, from the adult day spot, you know, it's sort of a big event. And we would try to do incremental steps until that point.
So after the letter is sent to DOH, do we have a sense of when they would respond or if they would respond to that letter?
They're not necessarily obligated to respond. We would push for a response, but it is something that can sit out there.
Here's another question. Do you see a separation in the letter between the opening argument for offsite programs versus on-site programs? On-site programs could have a more restrictive ruling to reopen. And I'll just take the first crack at that. So we from day one, our proposal to reopen was a phased-in approach, starting with off-site programs first. And, you know, I think it's clear that DOH agreed with that approach because they put that in their draft guidance. So, off-site programs, they were, I think, a little bit more, you know, comfortable with off-site programs opening first and kind of easing up on some of those restrictions for off-site programs. I'm not sure if the letter to DOH is going to talk or distinguish between offsite and onsite. I guess that's a question for Linnell and the litigator who's writing it. If we're going to get into that technical, those arguments as far as offsite programs should open first, or is it just going to be about adult day healthcare in general and the arbitrary nature of reopening?
Yeah, I can't actually speak to the specifics that they'll cover, but you know, I think the main point is what you talked about, that we had acknowledged that there was a there could be a distinction between the two types of programs, and that we were willing to recognize that distinction. But for purposes of the program as a whole, I don't think we have to get that granular.
What other steps will we take besides litigation? Where do we go next if we continue to not get a timeline from DOH?
Well, I think that's sort of, you know, that will be the difficult decision, right? So if we don't get a decision based on the letter, and we think maybe that the PR campaign isn't moving the needle, then, you know, that's going to be a decision for Anne and for the board. You know, what kind of next steps, you know, do you want to commence an action? Mm-hmm. And that's a decision you all will have to make. I mean, we can advise you on the pros and cons of both, but, you know, that's certainly something that at the end of the day, that's your decision.
I think, you know, right now we're collecting that information. We're collecting information, you know, we're doing the research on our legal arguments. And, you know, they're at the end of this, there could be, you know, not too many legal arguments in our favor. So as the lawyer characterized our situation, like, this is a really tall mountain that we have to climb on the litigation front. And it might, you know, litigation might not be successful. There's a good chance that it would not be successful. So what we're doing is, you know, starting with the legal letter to do the research, to lay out our arguments. And then if we don't, you know, get a response from DOH, we're really going to look at, the board's going to look at all of the information, all of, you know, the risk, the likelihood of success, and use that information to determine a next step if we're actually going to file a lawsuit. We're not there yet. We have, you know, some preliminary information, but not all of it to make that decision. And that's why we're starting with this letter. And again, you know, litigation is the last resort for everybody. So, and I think, you know, this kind of, that question, you know, what are the other steps that we'll take besides litigation? You know, I think that kind of segues into the next presentation. I just received another question. Are there other groups representing adult day healthcare members or council members or providers that may be effective in joining this effort or this lawsuit? So, you know, at this point, it's just Adult Day Healthcare Council who is leading the charge. You know, we represent more than 90%, 95% of all the providers across the state. We don't have any other, you know, partners to, you know, join the suit at this point, but we haven't actually filed a lawsuit. This is the legal letter will come from, will, you know, we're financing, Adult Day Healthcare Council is financing this legal letter and the PR campaign. But certainly if there are others that want to help in the cost or share some of that cost, we would love to meet with them. Okay. Another question. If we are required to reopen under existing nursing home testing requirements, will we address the reimbursement for staff testing due to the frugal reimbursement rates we function under? So it's our understanding that on-site adult day healthcare programs will need to follow the same staff testing requirements that the nursing home is under. So if you're on-site and right now your staff are tested once per week, then on-site adult day healthcare staff would also have to be tested once per week. If you're off-site, it's our understanding that that requirement does not apply and staff will not need to be tested under the same nursing home requirements. So Linnell can speak to this, but you know, how many billions of dollars is the state in a we're a $20 billion deficit. I don't see the state really increasing our rates anytime soon or giving any kind of add-ons for extra, the additional costs for business. I don't see the state increasing at this point reimbursement rates for transportation, considering the deficit. But go ahead, Linnell.
Right. I feel like I say this every year that there's always a fiscal, there's fiscal constraints on the program. But certainly, this is a crisis type situation. I will say, I agree with everything that Anne said. There's everyone is going to feel the pinch once the legislature comes back. And certainly when we start looking at the budget, I know the Division of Budget is looking at this minute by minute, but the deficit continues to grow. I think a lot of what we expect to be dealing with over the course of the next several months will largely be dictated by the results of the election next week. I know that there are two scenarios that the executive chamber is gaming out, which is, do we see a significant federal assistance package that New York can benefit from, or are we going to have more of the status quo, which is the states are on their own? And this will be a significant determinant for the New York's progress in sort of coming back to normalcy. And there has been a recognition amongst executive staff about testing and who is responsible for testing. And so to the extent that they can get traction on the federal level to pay for testing and to make that available and payments and all that kind of stuff, that has been a top priority for them. So, there are no easy answers, and certainly, this isn't an exact answer to the question that was posed, but it's, that's the real-time information that we have.
Linnell, I have another question about a potential lawsuit or the legal letter. Would we have clients or adult day healthcare registrants or members sign on to that, or would it come from the association only?
Yeah, that's a good question, and one that's better suited for my colleague, who is the actual litigator. Typically, the association is a named party along with individual programs to the extent possible, and the outer limits of both of those approaches, he would be better equipped to answer. But the reason for doing that is that you want to have what's called standing to bring your claim. And there are a number of procedural hurdles that you have to, before you can even get to the merits of a particular claim, dealing with, do you have the right? Are you being harmed? Do you have the right to bring this claim? And the judge would look at that. And so that's why you would want to really shore up that piece of things, which would include naming the association along with some individual programs.
And what about clients? What about registrants?
That's a good question. I typically in this kind of, this is again, I'm going to defer or caveat my answer that I'm not the litigator, but typically I think the programs and the association are who is named, but I don't necessarily see that a member would be prohibited from joining. So that one, I'm less confident in my answer.
Okay, great. I think that's all we have questions for right now for Linnell. Thanks, Linnell. I am going to turn it over to Paul and Leanne. Paul, would you introduce yourself to the membership?
Sure. Good morning, everybody. I'm Paul Fahey. I'm a vice president with Overit and Smith & Jones. My colleague, Leanne Ricciuti, is also on the call. And actually behind us are 42 other people, I think we're up to or whatever. Let me just briefly introduce us and then I can kind of dive into our role from a public relations standpoint. And it sounds like we all subscribe to the same philosophies of that progression from negotiation to public relations to litigations, and sort of that's the phase that we're at right now and we'll talk about that in a second. So we are Overit, we're located in Albany, New York. We're a team of about 45 people. And Leanne and I represent not only the public relations group, but a lot of the advocacy work. We support people like Linnell in their government affairs work. And we've worked with dozens and dozens of hospitals and health systems throughout the Northeast. We work with departments of health, both in New York State, other states, Office of Mental Health, Haney's. We've worked for the CDC. More relevant, though, we've worked with a lot of associations, member-driven organizations like yours that are in the health and human service space. So the Association of Assisted Living, NISHFA, we've worked with in the past, the Association of Community Living. We work with a lot of visiting nurse organizations around the state. And all of this on a variety of different, you know, good news, public relations, you know, playing defense on certain PR issues, working on membership communications. And we've worked, in fact, Leanne and I, pretty closely on a number of crisis PR issues, Legionnaires outbreaks, C. diff outbreaks. We've worked with the Citadel in the past. So happy to use our powers for good, not evil. So, and I'm not sure if Leanne can toggle in and out to introduce herself.
I can.
But if she's not able to, I was happy to steal her away about a year and a half ago from a competitor. And she had been somebody I worked with for more than a decade. She was in the trenches with statewide Spectrum News, formerly Time Warner Cable News, as an assignment editor. So she understands how things move through a newsroom and what gets the attention of the reporters. So as we're kind of walking through that process. So that's just a brief introduction of ourselves. And we're really just at the beginning immersion and planning stages right now. So what I'll share with you is really more of a sense of where I think we'll go, but we're still collecting not only the guidance and input from Linnell and her team, the association leadership, but also really this is an opportunity to kind of learn from you folks if you have any thoughts or, you know, ideas for us. But as Linnell was saying, you know, overall, we're at this stage right now where we want to start applying pressure and awareness to this issue. We want to be a little bit more assertive. We don't want to poke the governor or any key decision makers in the eye. So we're going to be working really very closely with and the association leadership and aligning with what Linnell and her team are doing at Greenberg Traurig, you know, just to make sure that there are A, no missteps, but B, the effect that we have can be very cumulative. So as elected officials or decision makers within the DOH are hearing about things through normal, you know, legal channels or you know, filings or even conversations that Linnell and her team are having, I want to make sure that we're providing some air cover and pressure and awareness from not only a public relations standpoint, but I'll talk in a minute about the public relations aspects of it. So, you know, this campaign is going to target those folks. You know, certainly it would be nice to have the general public rally around what we're going to do, but largely we really want the governor, the governor's advisors, you know, folks within DOH, maybe some committee members and elected officials, you know, to be aware of what we're seeing. Those are the folks that we're really trying to influence, and that makes our job a little bit easier. We're not at the mercy of trying to build out a very expensive statewide campaign with TV commercials and billboards and those kind of things. I think we can get much more surgical and synchronize with what's happening, you know, what the government affairs team is doing. And that's going to be a lot of what's guiding not only our media plan, but also our messaging, just to make sure that we're all kind of using the same phrases and analogies and working together pretty closely. So as I mentioned, you know, that what I typically see from a public relations supporting government affairs type of role, you know, things usually do start with negotiations. Then it sort of brings in the public relations team, you know, just before litigation to try to apply those kind of pressures. And as I mentioned, this is not, it can't be just by definition of its own budget, but I don't think it even if you had the budgets, I'd advise against those kind of expensive campaigns that we typically see, you know, billboards and TV and those kind of things. I think we can get a lot more efficient and surgical. Frankly, for what it costs for one billboard in downtown Albany, you know, we're going to be engaged to do a tremendous amount of work from a PR and digital media standpoint. So our team, myself, Leanne, you know, other folks that support us are going to be doing a lot of the heavy lifting. I'll describe again what I think is ahead for us from a tactical standpoint, from a messaging standpoint. We will be reaching out to call on you folks to ask for your help, but the effort we're gonna be asking the membership to do and the association leadership will be very minimal. We're certainly gonna try to produce some toolkits so that you can copy paste things onto your own social media, make it very simple. But we're also gonna be reaching out to identify and connect with families you know, that might be able to help us with our storytelling, you know, people who could serve as an example of some of the issues that we're facing. So let me talk about message development first, and then I'll talk about public relations, and then lastly, digital media and social media, because I think that gets pretty exciting. So, you know, as Angelina was sort of kicking us off this morning, and thank you, Angelina, for your leadership and motivational speech, I will follow you into the night. You know, you're really out there begging to do the work that you want to do. This is, frankly, your industry and healthcare's 9/11 moment. But as somebody earlier had described, your hands are tied. You know, you want to be out there. You want to be able to do this work. So as we look at message development, I think it's important to keep that context in mind. You know, you're the frontline heroes that are doing very, very difficult work. You're putting yourselves and maybe even your family in harm's way, trying to serve the people and the patients that you see every day. As Linnell was describing earlier, you know, we do have this affiliation. We are seen in the same light as nursing homes. And that can work for us in some cases. It can work in caution against us. I think wherever possible, we'll try to use those comparisons to our advantage. And if not, then reframe that context. You know, if it does seem like it's a bit arbitrary that, you know, why not us also, you know, we can use that again to start to build out our messaging. I'm sure, you know, Governor, you haven't forgotten about all the people we serve, but why the inconsistencies or whatever. Other messaging that we'll explore and will kind of find its way to our campaign perhaps are those kind of analogies and comparisons. As Linnell mentioned earlier, you know, Movie theaters are open. I can send my children to daycare. You know, there are a lot of other things that just simply don't make sense and start to fuel what seems rather arbitrary. You know, and so I think those kind of examples are things that reporters and the public can really grab onto. You know, we could make a very cerebral, logical, methodical case for why, you know, this and what we do is different. People get lost in that, but they do appreciate those kind of examples and comparisons as much as they will the humanization of this story. And I'll talk about that in a second. We also may want to position ourselves as a more efficient alternative to other, you know, types of services. You know, again, as Lynette was mentioning earlier, there's a massive deficit. So if we can be part of the conversation that says, hey, we are less expensive than something else, I think that also helps to, you know, make our case. And then most importantly, wherever we can humanize the story, and you know, my colleague Leanne is a fabulous storyteller. You know, what she loves to do is just, you know, reach out to you folks, ask about, you know, particular patients that you're serving, or maybe their families that are stressed because mom or dad are back at home. Maybe even the staff that are those frontline heroes. You know, we call that story mining, and that'll be a very early phase and something we'll be reaching out to you folks for in the next couple days, just to get a sense of, you know, what's out there. And that's the kind of thing that the media loves. You know, let's take the story we want to tell about just being able to go back to doing our work, and let's humanize that through a story of, you know, so-and-so, he was a private at the Battle of the Bulge in World War II and, you know, needs these types of services, and his family needs for him to have that type of service, or, you know, whatever it is, you know, that is the kind of thing that, you know, as long as our core messages are clear and we have the opportunity for the association to speak about what the issue is, you know, if we can localize the story, if we can humanize the story, it does a couple things. One, the media loves it and they'll jump on it and it'll get us out there. And two, and more importantly, the governor will see it, or the governor's advisors will see it, you know, and they'll say, gosh, we're getting a lot of pressure. Reporters all around the state are starting to talk about this. And it starts to apply some of that pressure that we want them to. And especially if this is happening in conjunction with either key meetings or phone conversations or, you know, letters or anything even more formal, you know, it has a very cumulative effect. So I think we can be pretty impactful there. We may want to look at statistics or surveys of the membership just to add a quantifiable component to it. I'm not really sure if that's going to be necessary, but in the past we have worked on campaigns where 87% of our members, you know, feel a certain way and they represent, you know, a large part of the population and that kind of thing. So that's just a quick description of, you know, the first phase for us is the message development. You know, how are we going to be talking about this, and what kind of tools are we going to use to, you know, celebrate the hard work our staff is doing, you know, talk about the important services that are needed for these folks, and what analogies, comparisons, you know, how do we humanize it? How do we bring that story out in a way that's, you know, very compelling and draws attention to sort of our core issues? So then there's two different components to it that we're going to be using from a tactical standpoint. One is public relations or largely media relations, and the other is digital and social media. So let me talk first about the public relations aspect. Again, the media is going to get the public's attention, but more importantly, the elected officials are going to see it. You know, their advisors are going to be reporting out because the, you know, committee members, the governor, decision makers at DOH, you know, don't like to be surprised. You know, they have people on their team whose job it is to say, you know, hey boss, I want to let you know that this was reported out in Rochester and on Long Island and the Capital Region and up north. You know, we're starting to see a lot of these stories, and the public is starting to hear about this issue, you know, perhaps more than they have before. We are going to be doing a very statewide effort. So from Buffalo to Montauk and everywhere in between, probably a particular emphasis in the Capital Region, just given, you know, the seat of government. And it may be part of what we do to put a little extra effort into key assembly or Senate districts. There may be folks that we identify, you know, beyond the governor's office, beyond the Department of Health, but there may be folks in the Assembly and Senate that are sitting on committees for aging or health that might be, you know, influential into the process. And if, you know, we know and can identify those folks and work with Linnell to say, okay, who are those key influencers? Then, you know, Leanne and I can then target, you know, Rochester Democrat and Chronicle. Let's, you know, get out there and make sure because so-and-so is out there or something. So we're going to be, you know, this is probably transcending a traditional press release unless we want to draw attention to, you know, we're releasing a letter, you know, that would certainly work. But largely we're going to be pitching stories. We're going to be reaching out, do that story mining that we were describing earlier and kind of learning about the, you know, people that you're serving, you know, tell those stories on a local level and then, you know, help kind of retell those on a statewide level. That'll take the form of both TV media, print media, radio, perhaps. But largely we're going to be out there just pitching, you know, calling reporters and saying, hey, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, you know, issue, you know, so that's happening on a statewide level, but also I've got a local example, you know, there's a person, so-and-so, here's his or her story, or maybe their family's story. You know, can you send a camera over? Can we schedule a media interview? And that's where we'll be reaching out to you folks just for help on those logistics. We're going to be doing all the heavy lifting. We'll help, you know, with all of the scheduling and coordination. We're just going to need a little bit of help identifying, sort of get us started, help us identify somebody. We can kind of take it from there. Other tools that we have in our toolkit, we may pen letters to the editor or op-eds or send you folks things and just say, hey, listen, could you just copy paste this and hit send, you know, to this particular editor, you know, just to help kind of supplement what we're doing from a story standpoint. So again, our role is going to be from a media relations, first starting to help develop the message in alignment with the government affairs and legislative, you know, teams. But we are going to be reaching out just to help us kind of connect with people and help connect reporters with people. We know you're busy. Most of the work is on us, but we do need to know, you know, who's at particular, you know, facilities or whatever else. And then beyond that, you know, if there are local reporters that have already written about you, maybe it was even a ribbon cutting or even something as simple as that. You know, if there's anybody in particular, Paul, Leanne, just want to let you know that so-and-so has written about us before, you know, makes it easier to pitch a story again. So that's the PR, which provides a lot of really broad awareness. You know, I kind of think of it as just air cover to what we're going to be doing on the ground. And that takes me to the digital and social media component of this. What I think is really interesting, you know, the association has a social media presence and we can put posts out there and perhaps even boost those a little bit so that they get noticed. We're going to try to build out a small toolkit so that you folks could copy paste things on your own, you know, individual social media accounts. Again, making it very simple, not asking you to write or design anything, but if we can give you a simple toolkit and even give you some guidance on timing, you know, between this date and this date, if you guys could post these things, that might help our efforts statewide. Largely spending time in Facebook, that still is the 800-pound gorilla. And, you know, as many alternatives as there are there, I don't think we're going to be on TikTok. I don't think the governor or his advisors are spending time there and things like that. But then one of the really interesting tools in our toolbox is geofencing. And I think I can share screen really quickly. I have a graphic. Can I share a screen? Let's see. Just to describe what I'm talking about here. Let me just say, there it is. So our digital teams have the ability to do something called geofencing. And I'm not sure who's familiar with it. So I'll speak about it pretty basic. We have the ability to look at a map, look at an individual address, draw a circle around that. Anybody with inside that circle, whenever they're on their phones, on social media, they're going to a particular web page, news, something like that, our ads will pop up, you know, serving only to people that are inside that circle. So rather than running social media or newspaper ads statewide, we have the ability just to circle a particular address, and that gets very efficient. There's very, very little expense. There's very little waste, and only people within those circles are going to be seeing our ads. So who do we put inside those circles, and what addresses would we share? And that's where we find the governor. That's where we find key decision makers for DOH. We find their home addresses. We find assembly members' home addresses, their district offices, you know, drawing circles statewide around all of those key influencers so that, and now I'll start to add up everything that I described, so that we've got a message that is very relevant, that's very compelling. We have stories that are here, you know, hitting the news that are very human, that tell a story about maybe the sort of arbitrary nature of what's happening to us, you know, the service that we provide, the hard work that our staff are doing. And so now we have this cumulative effect of news stories and your own individual social media posts, and maybe there are letters to the editor. And at the same time, all that's happening, the folks that we're really trying to reach can't ignore us. You know, every time they're on their phone, their iPad, you know, over the weekend, whatever else it is, for a certain narrow period of time, they're hearing about us and they're seeing us on their digital devices. So without spending a lot of money, we're going to create the illusion that we're frankly everywhere. You know, and so as Linnell's team's meeting with them, they're reading about it in the newspaper, they can't ignore it on their computers and on social media. You know, we're hoping that that cumulative effect will start to create the type of pressure that we're looking to assert, again, without poking anybody in the eye. So for us, the next steps, you know, we're starting to tighten up the messaging. Really wanted to take this, I guess, as an opportunity to give you folks the heads up that, you know, if you hear from us asking about, you know, any examples of you know, great stories that we could tell to the media, you know, we'll be reaching out to ask for your guidance there. We'll close the loop with you and the board, you know, to guide us as we're building out those plans and building out the timing and kind of rolling forward. So thanks for staying with me during that monologue. I hope everything, you know, kind of caught everything that we were describing. So let me just pause there for a second. And anything I'm forgetting, Leanne, anything I'm forgetting, or maybe we have a Q&A from the audience.
Should we, Leanne, do you have anything you'd like to add? I can spotlight you.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I would elaborate on a little bit is the what we mean by interesting stories to share. So can you hear me? Okay, good. So generally, you know, when we talk about it, you know, interesting characters and interesting news stories, we're talking about a singular person who has that compelling story to share. You know, if you're watching the 6 o'clock news and you see that there's was an awful fire down the street, you know, you listen to the fire chief talk about the fire, and then you listen to the homeowner who lost everything, you know, because the fire started in the middle of her son's birthday. That's the story that you're remembering, not that the fire chief said it started in the kitchen. Those are the people that we're looking for. These people who have, you know, the touchy-feely aspect of the story. So it would be the folks who's, you know, who have staff who have laid beside, you know, members, you know, while they're going through a tough time. You know, standout staff, standout folks in your care, and even the fun stories. You know, if you've got a group of folks that knit a bunch of hats for infant babies and donate them at Christmas time, like, that's amazing. And we would want to tell everybody about that. And, you know, even though that story doesn't direct exactly back to what our mission is at this time, it puts you at the forefront of what's happening. People remember the name. They remember who you are. They see who you are. They know that you do good things. And then they're going to remember, you know, what the cause is, you know, because we would needle that into every story in some fashion. So I just wanted to kind of elaborate a little bit on that. So when we reach out to folks in a particular region, you know, looking for someone to speak, that's the kind of thing that we're talking about.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to take some questions for Paul and Leanne. So if you have a question or a comment, please type it in the chat feature chat button. Here's maybe one angle to consider, Leanne. This person has a waiting list of about 25 people that would like to be admitted to her program. So these are like referrals. Mm-hmm. Besides our current members not getting services, there's an ongoing population in the community that needs our services, mm-hmm. That they can't get anywhere else. Can we also use this, that these people are being denied services due to our programs not being open?
Most definitely. That is an angle that we can take. When we are putting out these stories, we have to remember that the newspaper can write as long as they want, but remember that a lot of people's attention span doesn't always last as long as a newspaper article does. And television is only a minute and a half story, if that, sometimes shorter. So having a number of storylines to exemplify will work. So we can use that for one story. We can use something else for another story. And the more we have, the more momentum we have, and the more that people are seeing it. And it becomes, again, that top of mind awareness. So having all of these different angles, what we call them angles, different story angles, are always valid. I think that's
great. Yeah, it doesn't have to be just people who are registered of your programs. It can be, to Leanne's point, we could be telling the story about what's happening in your facility, but also, there are 25 people, even beyond that are also hoping to take advantage of these programs. So while we might humanize it and say, here's so-and-so that served at the Battle of the Bulge, doesn't he deserve to be able to have these services, number one. Number two, here are his adult children that, have now, don't have the skill sets or even necessarily the time to be able to take care of him during the day. It's putting a strain on their, work relationships, their home relationships. He doesn't have that balance of, even socialization. And on top of that, there are still, 25 other people here that want to, sign on for these same kind of programs. And that starts to really make this seem like a very, a broader impact. So, yeah. Other questions?
Can you speak to how long this media campaign will, will last? Is it a matter of a couple of weeks or a couple of months? Can you talk about the timeline for this?
Until you guys are open?
Yeah, right. we will absolutely be done and fired the day you guys are open. So I hope we're out of a job soon. But in all seriousness, it's going to be longer than a couple weeks, perhaps as long as a couple months. And the only reason I don't know specifically is, we're still building out that government affairs playbook. So I want to know from Linnell and her team, what are those different milestones? And when does she think she'll be taking some of those actions? Because we want to wrap around some of those activities. But I think in general, this is going to be a pretty short, aggressive blitz. This is not, and you don't want to hire us for a year, and gosh, I hope you're open sooner than that. So.
Yeah. To that end, if members have, as we're talking, if you have something immediately popping into your brain, please share it with Anne so that she can forward it on to us. Because, as we're developing these plans and the timelines and when we want to do things, we've already got an arsenal of stories that we can pluck from to kind of get things out there, in faster order.
Great. So let's talk about that for, let's just expand on that for a second, Leanne. So we'll be soliciting Adult Day Healthcare Council members for their stories or for their ideas. And perhaps you can get us like a form or some like things that people need to fill out. So you have the information that you need. So we're not going back and forth with families and with, providers. So, people can start. I guess what I'm asking you is what kind of information, I know you're looking for stories, but can you be a little bit more specific as to what you need make this happen?
Sure. So when we you know, you may think that you've got a great story. You have a person in care, you know, who is that World War II vet, and, you know, does these great things. Then the next step is maybe even before sharing with me, you reach out to him and his family and make sure that they're comfortable speaking to the press, because people can, a lot of times too, they'll say yes, and then they kind of chicken out at the last minute because it all of a sudden becomes uncomfortable when it becomes a reality. So we want to ask that question early, and make sure that they're okay with it. And that question can sometimes come a lot easier and have a more positive answer when it comes from someone that they're familiar with, which would be you, instead of me cold calling them and making that ask.
Oh, sorry, Leanne. Let me just add to that. I don't think it has to be even, you know, superheroes. I mean, these could be, you know, school teachers that maybe taught two or three generations in the school district, you know, and, you know, names and faces of people that the community might even recognize or have an interesting life story, and or maybe just, you know, just an average person, but their, you know, adult children are under a lot of stress right now because, you know, they're not able to return to these, you know, venues. And so maybe that's a part of the story. Like, I just lost my job because of this. You know, I really want to take care of my parents. That comes first, but I'm having trouble balancing some of those issues. In fact, the Capital Region's Albany Business Review had a story that one of our colleagues we pitched for just appeared today. And it was really just balancing work and home when you have small children. You know, those are the kind of examples of that we could be featuring. Sorry, Leanne, I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's okay. No, that's great. And you know, so that first, so you know, going back to Anne's point is, you know, we would want to make sure that whoever we would want to highlight is open to speaking with the media. If they, you know, have a great story, but they're not comfortable with television, but would prefer like a phone call for a newspaper article, let me know that, because there might be an instance where we just want to give a candid conversation to a single reporter. So that would be something to note, that they're not okay with TV, but okay with print. You know, and then contact information, the easiest way to get in contact, and obviously a little blurb about what it is that they have to share, what that story is, you know, and that would give me a good starting point. And then I could reach out and kind of vet it a little bit more. There's one main component to stories that we like to have, that always help, especially in today's day and age, is visuals. And so obviously it's a little bit difficult when our facilities are closed. We don't have the visual of the facilities and the programs that are taking place. So the visual then becomes the overworked adult child who's, you know, balancing children at home learning and their parents in the same home as well. And what that hecticness looks like. Probably a lot like my office behind me looks really hectic. You know, so I think, you know, kind of, you know, just kind of thinking about what some of those visuals might be. I can help you with that part. So if you don't have that initially, that's okay. A lot of times in these kinds of situations, news organizations have file footage that they can kind of tuck in between interviews in a news story. So we don't have to dwell on that in this instance. But yeah, I think, and you know, go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, and these folks don't have to have media experience. We can certainly help prepare them. Their role will be pretty minimal. You know, we're not asking them to tell, you know, a scripted, you know, documentary length, anything. And there may be opportunities where we do want to bring somebody and say, hey, listen, would you mind, you know, bringing mom or dad to this particular facility? And maybe we could just have this conversation socially distant, but outside, you know, and that might provide the context for the story. Hey, mom or dad really wants to go back inside and be with her friends, you know, and get these kind of services that they miss and that they need, but we can't, you know, I can't go in because of these issues. So we can even help figure out what's the right, you know, venue, and we can do a lot of that, you know, scheduling and logistics and everything else. We're just really looking for help identifying folks that, you know, could be, you know, comfortable going on camera and telling their story or being featured.
Yeah.
Great. Any other questions for Leanne or Paul? I'm really excited about this. I'm super motivated to get our stories out there. And I'm really happy that you're on board with us and for a period of time or as long as we need. So any other?
No, thank you for the opportunity. You guys are doing great work. You're on the side of angels. You know, would love to tell your story. These are far more rewarding than embezzlements or other misadventures. So really happy to be a resource and look forward to working with all of you folks in the future.
Great. We had a couple of people comment that could, you know, looking at communities, our adult healthcare programs, many of them serve underserved population or minority population. And there was a person who commented that maybe it could be a focus. You know, some of these programs kind of specialize in Hispanic communities or care, and there's staff that speak Spanish. I know a lot of programs in New York City also serve like a Caribbean or Haitian population. So perhaps that could be a focus, is some of these underserved minority communities. And, you know, the great thing about adult day healthcare is that it's in the community, you know, so it, mm-hmm. the program is representative of those community members and draws in lots of people from all different walks of life or, you know, countries around the world. So I just wanted to share that with you, that a few people are interested in highlighting the stories from their own communities that are, you know, minority populations.
Yeah, and I think that raises two thoughts just really quickly. One, we have a very deep network of news outlets. So for instance, a client of ours is was the New York or Brooklyn Hospital Center in Fort Greene. And even within their catchment area, there were 10 different, you know, minority publications, you know, Polish newspapers and Chinese newspapers and things like that. So we can certainly get those stories told in those communities to those communities. And in addition to that, I think, you know, it may be part of our messaging strategy, and we can talk about this offline, but, you know, I don't believe that the governor wants to be, you know, positioned as somebody who's not allowing these, you know, populations to get the kind of services that they need necessarily. It's a fine line to walk, but it's something worth considering. So, yeah, this is all great feedback and input. Thank you.
Okay. Hey, last chance for Leanne and Paul right now.
Oh. But actually, speaking of Linnell, if she's still with us on the call, you know, maybe even inviting her back in, Linnell, anything, you know, in response to what we've said, or as you were thinking about, you know, any feedback or ideas that came to you as we were sort of chatting along?
I think, you know, where you started, Paul, about complementing the efforts. And, you know, I'll just add that the administration, the current administration, is highly focused on press. And I do think that this will be an added dimension to our advocacy that I too am very much looking forward to. And the compelling nature of the stories, I mean, the stories almost write themselves, not to say that your job is easy, but as you said, you know, folks here are doing God's work. So it's really, you know, I too am very excited about the next steps.
Great. Thanks.
And just to reiterate, so the stories are going to come to me or come to the Adult Day Healthcare Council, and then we'll be the collector of people or stories, and then we'll share it directly with Paul and Leanne. So we'll send out perhaps a form, so it's easy for you to kind of fill out, to make sure we capture all the information that Leanne and Paul need. So look for that in your inbox shortly. So yes, all stories should come to ahill@leadingagey.org. And then we'll collect those and get them out. Great. Well, thanks again, Paul and Leanne. I really appreciate it. and really looking forward to working with you. And I think, and I can't wait to see some of these stories in print and in the press. So thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So this concludes, I guess, the formal portion of our annual meeting. You know, our meeting was focused on adult day healthcare reopening and the next steps we're taking for legal and for this PR media campaign. I would like to open it up to other subjects or other questions that you might have. Again, we were focused on adult day healthcare reopening, but if there are other questions unrelated that you have or any comments that you'd like to make, please put it in the chat button and we can address those, Angelina or myself or other members of the board. Okay, one question we have is, or comment perhaps, is about telehealth. So they're saying that their program has been providing telehealth for a number of months. Where do we stand on continuing to promote telehealth as a part of adult day healthcare services? So that's a great question. We've, you know, Adult Day Healthcare Council, we've been, I'm just going to stop your video there. We've been promoting or, you know, helping members through their telehealth programs for many months. And of course, you know, we've been communicating to DOH that along with the reopening guidance that we hope or we anticipate that they will allow telehealth to continue even after programs open. So, they've recognized that comment. You know, I don't think it's really their call, like the Department of Health per se. And the reason why I say that is because your ability to provide telehealth or any Medicaid provider to provide telehealth at this point is through an executive order of the governor, which has been extended, I believe, until early November. So as long as the governor has kept that as long as that executive order is valid, you can, continue to do your telehealth. But I do see, and we are promoting telehealth to continue even after adult healthcare programs reopen. We kind of see this as like a new service line for you that it could really supplement your in-person visits. And, you know, obviously, you know, telehealth seems to be a wave of the future, and there's been enormous success with telehealth, not just in adult day healthcare, but in other industries or provider types as well. So I think it will continue. I think there's going to be a push in many different industries to continue telehealth, and we should definitely, or we will partner with those other industries to promote telehealth beyond the pandemic. Somebody is asking about, has anybody received authorizations from Managed Long-Term Care for telehealth? She's having a problem getting some authorizations. We can't share with you which plans are authorizing telehealth. That's a big no-no on a forum like this. But I can tell you that there are managed long-term care plans that are authorizing telehealth on a case-by-case basis, and to continue to go after those plans because many are approving telehealth. I can't share with you the names of those plans. I would just encourage you to go after them and to make your arguments. We have a word of encouragement, so thank you for that. Do you have any information about how many social models are open across the state at this time? That's a good question. I don't have a number of social models that are open. That's partly because social models just really aren't registered with the state. Or they're not, there's not like a public record of social models. There is a record of social models if you're in New York City in the five boroughs. Those are listed on the DFDA website. At this point, it's my understanding that social adult daycare is not open, has not been approved to reopen in New York City. But there was an order from the mayor back in March, and I believe that is still to temporarily close the social adult daycare, and that still exists or that's being enforced. Upstate or Long Island, you know, that's a different story. And what we're hearing is that some counties are allowing adult day health or social, sorry. Some counties have reopened social adult daycare. Some social programs are asking for approval from their county to reopen, their county office of the aging, especially those programs that receive funding directly from the county. Programs that don't receive direct funding from the county, they're just probably going right to the managed long-term care plans and asking for authorizations. So while we don't have a number, we do know that there are some that are operating across the state, and that's largely upstate. And I'm not sure to the extent that managed long-term care plans are authorizing it, but we could look into that. Okay, this person is asking if we can get a list of programs that have closed and directors who are no longer with us so we know if our colleagues are still available for support. And then regular updates with any new closures or director changes. Yes, we can share some of that information. To permanently close your program, there's a process that, you know, your nursing home has to apply for closure. And there's a lengthy closure report that you have to submit if you're going to close to the state. And it's very clear in regulation that your decision to close is not made public. Your staff, you know, adult day healthcare staff is not even supposed to know. Registrants are not supposed to know until the state actually approves that closure and sends you a letter with that approval. So I'm not supposed to know of programs that have closed or that have permanently closed. I only know when you all would know, like when it's made public. So to that end, yes, we can share programs that have closed. Maybe that would be, we can do that on a regional list, because I'm sure you would like to know which programs have closed regionally. So the information that I share is just what I have or what I know. It's not necessarily, completely accurate, but I can share with what I have. And I will ask those program directors that are no longer employed with their, in their organization, if they would feel comfortable, sharing their personal, home information, contact information, to their colleagues in the region. We can certainly send out a full membership list, or we'll put, I can send out a full membership list on email, and then you can search that through program name to see which programs have closed. To my knowledge, there's been 10 In the last, publicly, there has been 10 that I know of that have received approval from the state to close. So those are programs that have received that approval, and that's public knowledge. Somebody is commenting that a social adult day program in Rochester has been approved to reopen from their county. One question is, do we know how the Office of Public with Developmental Disabilities or OPWDD programs are doing with their reopening day programs? Can we use these statistics to also promote our reopening? Not sure if Linnell, if you have thoughts to share on that question or any of the other board members. I haven't heard personally of how well OPWDD programs are handling their reopening. I know they have reopened. I just don't know if it's been successful. I don't know if they've been running into problems. I don't know if there's any COVID in those programs. I would really, you know, I'd love to hear from you all if you've heard of anything. You know, you as a program director tend to have those connections or those relationships with the program directors or those case managers at those facilities or those programs. So if you've heard of something, please let me know. Can we use these statistics? The other part of this question is, can we use these statistics or these success stories in OPWDD for our reopening? Yes. In fact, we've used the relaxation of the transportation for OPWDD, the guidance that OPWDD is using for their transportation. We use that in our proposal to reopen for our transportation. So I think that there's a lot that we can use or a lot of similarities. We have been sharing that with the state. I remember a conversation I had with the governor's office regarding this. I'm not sure how well that resonates with the state because OPWDD DAHAP programs aren't located inside the nursing home. OPWDD programs are it's a much bigger, larger provider type than adult day healthcare. But there are many similarities, of course. Okay, so this person has a comment that I think she's in Rockland County, that they have a social day program that has opened and 2 months later they closed because of a COVID outbreak. She also says that the telehealth registrants and their families have said that they will not return to program until there's a vaccine or while other states or countries are battling COVID. So I'm sure you've heard something similar from your families, a reluctance to return to program before a vaccine. Maybe you've heard the opposite, that people are not worried about a vaccine or not worried about what's happening across the state or in other states or in other countries. I think that you'll just see a really wide range. I mean, I've seen a wide range of feelings about returning to program. So we have members of the Adult Day Healthcare Council that feel strongly that it's not appropriate for adult day healthcare programs to reopen at this point. And they're not sure if they would reopen given an opportunity to do so because they feel it's unsafe. And on the other hand, we have many members who would open, you know, wanted to open in June, if not before. So I think we just have to be mindful that there's a lot of different opinions out there about reopening, and families will be just begging you to come back. And there might be families who are very reluctant, looking for a vaccine. This one comment, this one member is commenting that, that it's very risky to reopen adult day healthcare at this point. And she feels the risks outweighs the benefits. That the governor has kept us closed for a reason. That we need to keep in mind of keep the health in of the registrants in mind, and remember that we're a healthcare facility. So that's an example of, members are really, there's a wide range of opinions and feelings about reopening adult day healthcare at this point. This person is asking to get regular, either weekly or biweekly email updates regarding the progress of what's being done, along with a space for member questions. They also think it might be beneficial to have a Zoom meeting where we could all talk about frustrations, questions, et cetera. So I think that's great. We've had a few regional meetings conducted via Zoom over the last couple of months. Perhaps it's time to do another round of Zoom regional meetings. One challenge to that, it's not something that we couldn't overcome, but one challenge is that we have really, our board of directors, half of them have left. And so there has been, and some members of our board are working so much in the nursing home that they're really unable to commit to regional meetings or to do this. So that being said, we will try to schedule some new Zoom meetings and to give people a forum for, sharing frustrations, as you said, and asking questions.
And what about a brown bag and bitch, actually sit and where the purpose of the meeting is not to have a formal meeting in that moment, but is to really have that time to engage with each other that we would normally have at a conference. I think one of the things that we're missing is that opportunity to complain about how frustrating it is from each of our individual perspectives. And as we hear how people are responding, it kind of gives us courage sometimes. So maybe we do just kind of block off an hour for a totally informal, not expecting answers from anybody, but just an opportunity for directors and members to share with each other.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think we should do that on a regional basis. So the groups are a little bit smaller. So people have time, perhaps, everybody will have an opportunity to say something or to chat.
Yeah, I mean, not just a formal agenda meeting, right? Again, I think it's important to have the regional meetings and to supplement that with just an opportunity and a space for people to talk and engage about what's happening for them.
Okay, so if, got it. So the other part of this question, could they get regular email updates regarding the progress of what's being done? For the past many weeks, there's been no update or there's been an update, but it hasn't, there hasn't really been much worth sharing. As far as open, this, as Linnell said, our guidance to reopen really stalled with the governor's office. It was really, we were very hopeful and things were moving and shaking, and all of a sudden, it's radio silence. So for the past couple of weeks, the board has been meeting frantically to decide on next steps. And then they hired Greenberg Traurig on a separate contract for litigation and hired Over It Media for a PR campaign. So now that we've got, I think, something to report on, we'll definitely be sharing that with the members more frequently than what's been, for the past couple of months, past few weeks, it's been radio silence with the state. So yes, we will be sharing information, updates on the PR campaign, certainly, and on any developments with that legal letter. Somebody is just commenting that there are many members, meaning registrants, who need therapies and resources that adult day healthcare programs provide, and they're regressing from being at home. Yep, we've heard that from a number of different people, and it's a really good angle to use with the media. So thanks for that comment. One person is saying that a social model program in Dutchess County, which is the Hudson Valley, is open with very low number of participants. He frequently gets asked why the social day program is open and the medical model program is not open. And a comment of support. So thank you for the support. This person is saying that she agrees with Angelina and that it'd be helpful to know that the board was meeting during the last several weeks, that it's really hard, the silence is difficult. Even if you hear that the board met twice a week, thank you for what you do and all the board is doing.
You know what? I can commit to that. I mean, I'm sorry, everybody. I really didn't know how to do the whole chair thing yet. I wasn't really ready for it, but I will commit to that right now. When we have meetings, I will reach out and let you know, hey, we met. We're all as frustrated as you are. Send us questions and things. We don't have anything new, but we wanted to let you know that we're working for you. I will make that commitment to you. I'm sorry about that.
I don't think anybody's asking you to apologize, Angelina. You're doing great. Let's see. This person is just making comment that she's a nurse, and it would be really bad to be open and then have to close again due to infection. It would be even longer to have to reopen, and more facilities would need to be kept closed. So I think that is something that, the virus is active in different parts of the state, or more active, I guess, or community transmission is different in different parts of the state. So, even if we were to, I think for the people who are really worried about reopening and the risk, just keep in mind that, adult day healthcare programs, what we're working for is for adult day programs to have the option to reopen. Right now there's no option. So we're really promoting that choice. And if, adult day healthcare programs across the, across the board opening, if your program or if your facility feels that they're not in a position or the community transmission is such that you would not reopen if even granted the authority or if you are allowed to, that's certainly okay. That's going to be a decision that you and your program would make. So I understand, understand how you feel and that it's a risk. And some providers may want to take that risk and others may not. Does anybody else have anything to add? Any other questions or comments? Got about 10 minutes left. Would anybody from the board of directors like to say anything other than Angelina? You can just unmute your phone. Okay. I just want to remind everybody or just encourage everybody to consider running for the board of directors. It's an important time right now, or it's a crucial time right now for our association. And we really need leaders, new leaders to fill these vacancies. And it's a very, from what people have told me, that when people who have left the board in the last couple of months and their role at their adult healthcare program, they have said that one of the things that they'll miss most about working in adult healthcare is their time on the board. That the board is a really fulfilling, they've learned a lot. The relationships they make with other board members have been really important to them. And I just want to let you know that, you know, it's hard work to be on the board, but it's also very fulfilling. And we try, you know, we really support each other. And I just encourage you, if you've ever been on a board of directors, maybe for another not-for-profit or association, or if you've been a board member in the past, and you've had that board experience, I just really encourage you to volunteer for our 2021 board of directors, and that our nominations will be accepted until November 27th, and we'll have a ballot that is sent out the first week of December. You'll have a couple of weeks to fill in your ballot and return it back to us, and new members will be installed January 1st.
And that past chair position is open. So we're actively seeking someone who's been a chair in the past who would be willing to step into that past chair role. Correct, Anne?
Correct. Thank you. Yep.
So if at some point you've been a chair, you've held the chair position, and you'd be willing to step in right now, oh, we really need you. Now is the moment to come on back and give us that that historical wisdom, right? We could really use it, please.
Thanks, yep. All right, so I see a lot of messages of support. So thank you for sending those in the chat button. Really appreciate it. And I don't see any other questions at this time. So that concludes our annual membership meeting. You know where to find me, ahill@leadingageny.org. And it's best for you to email me and not call me in my work phone here because I sometimes have to pick up my kids from school and I have to work from home. So it's best to email me and then I'll call you back on my cell phone if I'm out of the office. And I just want to say thanks again to Linnell and her team at Greenberg Traurig. They've been doing an enormous amount of work for us these last few months. And I know they have a lot of other clients too. So your support has been really great, Linnell, and we all appreciate it. To the board of directors, thank you so much for all the hard work that you've been doing, especially the last couple of weeks, making some difficult decisions. And finally, Paul Fahey and Leanne Cutie, thanks for being on this call today. And I know that you've said in the past that you'll work with us or, you know, the membership. If there's additional, you know, we might have additional calls like this, maybe not as long, but we might have some focused calls on our media campaign or public relations campaign. And so I really appreciate all of the time that you're spending with our membership and kind of helping us out with making us even more effective advocates than we are. And thanks to the membership for advocating for your programs, for sending in all of those letters to your legislators. Thank you for all of the work that you're doing on telehealth and staying in touch with your registrants. And I will see you all next time and look to hear from us with some more concrete instructions for sending us those personal stories. So thanks again and have a great day, everybody. Bye.
Thank you.